Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez from Good to Be Social. And today we're going to talk about the lawyer as a CEO. Very interesting topic. Our guest today is Reza Torxadeh. Reza is the founder and CEO of TorxLaw, a plaintiff's personal injury law firm based in Los Angeles with offices throughout the country. Reza is also the author of The Lawyer as a CEO, has obtained record-setting results, and he is also an honorary board member of the Cry Lawyer Charities and chairman of the Dean's Inner Circle at UCI Law. Welcome to the show, Reza.
Thank you, Guy, and thank you for having me on.
No, you're welcome. So before we dive into the topic and talk about your book, tell me a little bit more about yourself. How did you start practicing law, and have you always practiced PI? And how did you decide to write this book, The Lawyer as CEO?
Great question, and I'll take them kind of in reverse order. You know, when I first came out of law school, it is very challenging to figure out what really goes into running and operating and scaling a law firm. There were no classes offered in law school. There were no manuals or books. Most every other industry has authoritative guides and training and tools for that particular area. And lawyers, for whatever reason, in the legal industry, just does not. You know, they don't teach you how to run a business. They don't teach you how to think like an entrepreneur. They don't teach you the elements that are required really to run a successful organization and be competitive. And when I look back on my now 15-year legal career, I wanted to know, you know, had I had certain information, where would I be today? What would the trajectory of my legal career look like? And I decided to share my experiences in this book so that the younger generation of lawyers and those lawyers who are running their firms right now across the country can read my experiences and not have to repeat the mistakes that I made along the way. I don't think there's a book like this on the market. And I was very transparent and vulnerable in some of the stories that I shared and some of my experiences that, you know, potentially could have been fatal, not only to the longevity of my firm and my company, but certainly at times, maybe my career. And so I looked at it as a way to, you know, give back, but also share how important it is that if you want to be competitive as a law firm owner in today's industry, it's not enough to just be a good lawyer and practice good law. It's just the industry is changing so quickly. And in order to stay competitive, I think it's really important to hear some of my stories and share some of, you know, what I believe the landscape is going to look like down the line. Having said that, yes, I have only done plaintiff's work. I've been only representing personal injury victims and their families for the last 15 years. And this really stems from, I think, my childhood and the way I was raised and the experiences that my family had growing up. I am a child of immigrant parents who came to America during the late 70s. And watching my parents work as hard as they did, make the sacrifices that they made so that their two sons had an opportunity in a new land, in a new country. And, you know, watching that, I got to witness firsthand what it's like to be an underdog. I got to witness firsthand injustice in my parents' homeland of Iran. And I wanted to do things differently. And so when I realized and recognized what it meant to be a plaintiff's lawyer, to work on a contingency fee basis, meaning that if we don't win our cases, we don't win, and to be able to represent people from all walks of life. I've represented homeless people and I've represented celebrities, and they're all equal. And what we do provides them a level playing field against their opponents and against our opponents. You know, we're generally going up against multi-billion dollar corporations who, without any argument, would be able to win or steamroll any average person just by looking at the sheer war chest they have in terms of resources and money. And so knowing that we are the true underdog, the true David versus Goliath story, the true, you know, keys to the courthouse, it's pretty inspiring, and I can't imagine doing something else with my life.
I love it. That is fantastic. So I remember when I graduated law school, and I completely agree with you that, you know, they don't teach you how to run a business in law school. They don't teach you marketing. They don't teach you, you know, anything about, you know, especially if you want to start your own law firm. I remember reading a book, and I don't know if you read it. It was by Jay Thunberg, and it was called How to Start and Build a Law Practice. Did you ever come across that by any chance?
I did not.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I graduated law school in 1994, so it's been a while, but that was the book, and there was nothing else out there about how to actually run your law firm as a business. I'm interested to learn, you said, you know, one of the things you just talked about is, you know, one of the things that made you write your book is thinking about some of the challenges and adversities that you overcame. Talk a little bit about that and how your knowledge now can help other law firm leaders and law firm owners.
Yeah, absolutely. When I look at the last 10 years, and my firm just turned 10 years old, the things that I am now focused on are way different than the things that I was focused on very early on. You know, when I first started my practice, my focus really was on providing legal representation at the highest levels. And that's what I was dedicated to 100%, was making sure that I did everything I needed to do every single day so that I knew that my clients had the absolute best representation. As success came in and I obtained some really amazing results, more cases came in and other lawyers started to refer their cases to us. And we began to grow the firm and scale, which was always my vision, was to have a firm that has a wide and long reach to be able to help as many clients as we can. That was always my vision. That was always my goal. But I was never focused on the right things that actually allow you as an organization to grow and scale and do it effectively and do it in a way that's meaningful without losing the quality of your core product. At the end of the day, yes, we are a profession, but this is also a business. And unlike any other business out there, the things that really make businesses thrive are stuff that I never considered early on in my career. Today, I focus a lot on culture. What is our company culture? Who are we? What are our core values? Now, if you would have told me that 10 years ago when I first started my practice, I would tell you, look, get out of here. I don't have time to think about this stuff. But having gone through all the stuff that I did and all of the pain led me to really focusing on these core practices and areas that really, I think if someone is serious about scaling and growing your organization and doing it in a meaningful way, you need to focus on culture being the first one.
I love it.
We spend a tremendous amount of time and resources talking about culture. It's in every single meeting. It's in every single discussion. Our recruitment process, we spend a tremendous amount of time on recruiting. We have a whole process now that, you know, we're not just collecting resumes and picking out the first person that, you know, may or may not have a little bit of experience, may or may not have worked for a competitor, which were barometers that we would use 10 years ago on how to hire folks. Completely changed now. But the stories that I share in the book really tie into why it is important to think about culture, why it is important to think about recruiting in a very intentional way. And if I could help one person, if I can help one lawyer or law firm owner or one business owner, because I think a lot of the things that I talk about in the book could be applied to any industry and any business, to save them from the things that I had to go through, then I've done my job and I've impacted, you know, somebody in a meaningful way. And for me, books have been life-changing. I love books. I love to read. I love to learn. And I felt like I had something important and meaningful to say and decided to share it with the rest of my fellow lawyers.
Fantastic. One of the things I know you talk in your book is the importance of legal marketing, right? And legal marketing is always a hot topic. What have you learned with regards to legal marketing? And what advice do you have for a lawyer who's just starting out, figuring out, you know, how to do legal marketing when it's potentially expensive and very, very competitive?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think if you're not marketing, or you look down on marketing, then you're just not going to make it. If you're relying on word of mouth and you're relying on referrals, I think there's a ceiling. There's a limit as to how much you can grow and scale and the clients and demographic you can reach. So to me, marketing is probably the most important thing you can focus on and think about as a business owner. And yeah, is it expensive? Absolutely. I mean, I think in the 15 years that I've been doing this, this is probably the most expensive cost per acquisition in that time span. And it is competitive. It's ultra competitive. And you've got hedge funds and banks that are bankrolling these law firms. And, you know, virtually, if you're going to go dollar for dollar, it becomes almost impossible. But there are so many effective ways to market outside of TV, outside of billboard, outside of radio, outside of competing dollar for dollar. With the advent, obviously, of social media and digital marketing, the various digital platforms that are out there, I think you could be a brand new lawyer and be just as competitive. Now, I'm not talking about volume and scale of someone who's doing mass media, but being able to find those cases that you're interested in, being able to reach a unique demographic. There's just so many creative ways today, and I see it every single day, but this is something that you have to work on and really be intentional about every day. And there are ways to do it. And I talk about that in the book. And I think one key thing is, don't just think that because a law firm is on TV or on billboards or on radio, do not automatically assume that they're doing really well. Do they have the funds to run those ads? They certainly do. Are those ads more effective than what you're doing on digital or what you're doing offline? I don't know. But I would argue that if you are a law firm owner, you're looking at marketing and you're brand new, and I would say save your advertising dollars and look at the more effective, affordable ways to be able to acquire clients. And at the end of the day, what you want is longevity. You don't want to get rid of your entire budget and not be able to survive. And I think that's a really important piece of information, is you need longevity. You need to be able to withstand those slow months, because for a contingency firm like mine, the cash flow isn't consistent. You know, it ebbs and it flows. Yeah. The new cases coming in, they ebb and they flow. And so, you know, to put up a billboard, I would ask yourself, is this more of an ego purchase, or is it truly a business decision that's going to have a return for your firm?
I completely agree. And even in the digital realm, there is a lot of competition. And you're right. You have private equity firms and VCs and hedge funds and banks bankrolling a lot of the tort, especially the mass tort lawyers. But I do believe, I agree with you. I think even for the lawyer just starting out, if you can really master, you know, one or two of the digital channels and really learn how to leverage it to build your network and build a steady source of not just clients, but referrals, you know, I think is definitely the way to go.
Do you want to start a successful podcast that will generate leads for your law firm? At Good2Be Social, we work with many different law firms and help them to produce and promote their podcasts. Podcasts today are more popular than ever. In fact, today's internet users routinely use podcasts on a monthly, weekly, or even daily basis to stay informed and be entertained. As this medium continues to grow, law firms don't want to fall behind and need to move beyond traditional written content and onto the digital airwaves. Unfortunately, when it comes to podcasting, many legal marketers aren't sure about where to start. With our latest ebook, The Law Firm Guide to Podcasting, readers can learn how to choose a format, a topic, and a name that will get you noticed, how to select and reach out to potential guests, the technology and the recording basis you know to produce a successful show, as well as how to measure the success of your podcast. So hurry now, go to the Good to Be Social website and look for the Law Firm Guide to Podcasting ebook.
Let me go back to talk about culture, because you know, you talk a little bit about culture, and obviously in your book, you talk a lot about culture and your staff. Can you expand a little bit about why you think as a lawyer, your law firm's culture and core values and your why are so important?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're a law firm owner, you're a business owner, you're an entrepreneur. And the people you bring into your firm, those are the people that are going to make your culture. What I used to do is, you know, we'd hire someone, they'd come in, I'd sit down, I would talk to them and tell them a little bit about who I am, where I came from, and the things I believe in. And I so naively assumed that that conversation meant that they also share the same values I do, that they share the same work ethic as I do. And so what would happen over time, as we brought in new people, every time we'd bring somebody new in, they're bringing a whole new set of values that I know nothing about. But at the same time, it wasn't really my job to know what their values were. It was my job to really just communicate to them what our values are. You know, what are my values? What are the values that this company wants to live by every single day? And I'll share with you ours. We've got five, and why they're so important. And we've got radical authenticity as one. That means being transparent, be yourself, being honest, both internally with the rest of the team and externally. Striving for the win is another one. That means we do what we need to do to win. Focus on performance, focus on goals, always be striving for the win. Next one is respect for each other. That means, again, internally within the team and externally, whether you agree or disagree with someone, you have to have respect for each other. Growth mindset is another core value that we have. Always be learning, always be developing, both personally and professionally. And then unwavering integrity is our fifth one. And that means do what you say what you do. The reason why these are so important, and it's important for my team to live by these every single day, is because if you're grounded in these core values, every single decision you make or you're going to make or you're debating on making, if they're woven into one of these five, then the answer you're looking for should be pretty easy. And if you're behaving in a way that is contradictory to any of these core values, then this might not be the right firm for you. And there was a time, and I talk about this in the book, where even though I thought we had a great firm culture, even though I thought we were the greatest company to work for, it was actually the total opposite. We had no firm culture. You know, it was a toxic environment. It was a lot of sabotage between the team members. And I would spend my days dealing with internal battles and drama instead of really figuring out, hey, how can we be more effective as a company? How can we be more efficient? How can we be better lawyers? And that truly was a pivotal point for me in my career, that if somebody is going to be hired by our firm, they are now going to live by these core values. And if they don't share these core values, they don't live by them every single day, I don't want them in my firm. Our why is we get to change people's lives every single day.
Right.
Whether yep. you're the receptionist who's answering our phones, or you're the trial lawyer who's getting the verdicts, or anyone in between, it is us that our clients are coming to in their deepest, darkest times. It is us that they turn to for help. It is us that they come to. And that is an incredible honor. That is an incredible responsibility. So even though some of the tasks within the firm might be mundane and repetitive and difficult to do on a long-term basis, like ordering medical records, you know, that is a tedious process. But when you tie that into the fact that that job, that role, that responsibility contributes to changing somebody's life and their family's life, That's pretty incredible and powerful stuff to be committed to and dedicated to every day.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. How do you teach people your values and your core values? You know, if someone is just starting at your firm, obviously, you know, they're not going to come in right away understanding all of that. So how do you actually get them to learn the values and make sure they're jiving within your firm culture?
Yeah, that's a great question. It starts even before they're hired. It starts at the recruitment process. And it's very simple. We communicate these values. We communicate them in everything that we do. But if you look at our recruitment process, our values are communicated. They're delivered. These are the things we believe in. And in fact, we're coming out with some video testimonials from staff members. And one of the videos is who should not work here. You know, who should not apply for this job? And we talk about the people that shouldn't. And
that's great.
When we hand select people to join our firm, we do. Every role is hand selected, hand picked. We want to make sure that that individual shares these things because we're going to be making a huge investment into that person. We're making an investment into them personally. We're making an investment in them professionally because we want to see them grow. We want to see them be elevated in the professional role that they want to achieve. I mean, and everybody's got goals. And, you know, we've established career pathways for every single role in the firm and the organization. And, you know, when you combine that with bringing in someone who really shares these values, it's an incredible thing to see the impact that having these small communication, these small really, it's not difficult to come up with core values. You just have to sit down and think about what's important to you. You know, our core values are going to be different than anybody else's, but This is not brain surgery and it just needs to be communicated. And I think if it's communicated, you start attracting the kind of people you want in your organization and the type of people that don't belong, they weed themselves out, they leave. And that, you know, establishing these core values and communicating them repetitively every single day in every email and every meeting has really reinforced all of that and has made probably the most profound impact of anything I've done.
I love it. Fantastic. Unfortunately, we have run out of time today, but I'd love to hear more in the future. So maybe we'll have you back at some point. But before I let you go, what word of advice would you give a young lawyer who is just starting out and who is thinking about starting their own law firm? What would you tell them, knowing what you know today?
I think understand why it is you want your own law firm. It's a very challenging endeavor, and you need to do it for the right reasons. But if you have the right reasons and you love what you do, then stay the course. And it might take time, but stay the course.
Awesome. Really great. All right. Well, Reza, thank you so much for your time today. We are going to not only add a link to your book on our show notes, we'll also have links to your website, to your LinkedIn profile, and to your Twitter account. To our audience, if you enjoyed today's episode and you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, you can go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. And there you can subscribe. You can also check out some of our great past episodes. Reza, thank you again for joining us today. I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your incredible insights. And like I said, love to have you back sometime in the future.
Thank you so much, Guy. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. All right. And to our audience, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. We will see you next time.